Let's talk about meditation for a few minutes. How's your practice going? Anybody on the verge of anything new and wonderful? Yes?
I have a problem with the separation between practice and appliance. My meditation practice is wonderful, and I'm getting deeper and further into it. But then in real life, back, I so often catch myself back into responding from a habitual pattern. And in all the wonderful insights and intentions I have in meditation are gone for the moment. You know, so this discrepancy is what I'm dealing with.
Oh, that's really good that you're aware of that. And that's it. First of all, you have to become aware that there are the discrepancies. And then even more than that, you want to get to the place where you're aware of them as they're arising. At the same time. Yeah. So... and so that's the challenge. It's very much like when you begin to meditate, you keep forgetting what you're doing. Right?
Forgetting what I'm doing.
You sit down to meditate and your mind wanders and all of a sudden you realize that, I forgot what I was doing. I haven't been doing what I was supposed to do for the last however many minutes it was, right?
Yeah.
So it has an exact parallel. You get up from your cushion and you go out and start living your life, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh wow, I wasn't doing what I meant to be doing for the last few hours.
Yeah,
so it's exactly the same thing. And so in meditation, when you're sitting and you have a realization, you say, oh well, good, now I know what I'm supposed to be doing, and then you go back to doing it. And of course, what you're supposed to be doing in your daily life is staying mindful, staying aware, seeing when your emotions and your behaviors are arising out of old inappropriate conditioning and causing you to do things and feel things and get your mind all tied up in knots that you don't have to do. Right? So, and of course, it's also parallel in that when you realize that you've forgotten what you were doing in meditation, and you bring your attention back to the breath, there's a little while where you're staying with it quite well, and yes, you know what you're doing, and yes, you're watching your breath. And then it's some distraction, it comes along, and you're either off your guard, you know, and you've slipped into a decreased state of awareness, or the distraction that comes up is so strong that it carries you away, and this is what happens. It's exactly the same thing that is happening in your life. You let your guard down, and something that shouldn't have tripped you up does. Or else, something comes along that is strong enough that it kind of overwhelms the degree of mindfulness that you've been cultivating. So it's all very much the same thing. Now, the important thing is the moment that you realize that you were thinking and acting, speaking in a way that was less than fully mindful. And you can, and so you want to reinforce that in whatever way you can, you know, by thinking about, how did this come about? How did I react? What was I feeling when I said that? Where did those feelings come from? And this will make a strong imprint. And it does, and then you, of course, from that point on, you try to keep as much mindful awareness as you can in place. But I have found that it's very helpful to have a period of reflection when you just reflect on those other times during the day when those things might have happened, And you hadn't got them. You hadn't noticed. Even up to that point, you're doing your reflection, you realize, well, yeah, not only did I do that this morning, but there was this other time when this other thing happened, and I wasn't any more aware then either. By bringing them into your conscious awareness, and by reflecting on them, not judging them or anything like that, but just basically just saturating the event with mindful awareness, even though it's retrospective, you know, then what this is going to do is it's going to condition your mind so that the next day you're more likely to catch these things while they're happening. Or, as you say, eventually you start to recognize them before they happen. And of course, you're already probably recognizing some of them before they happen, right? And others while they happen. But the point is that you just keep on practicing, and the occasions when your guard is down will become fewer and fewer. And your vulnerability to being carried away by something that carries a lot of intensity will become less. So, when you become aware of the discrepancy between what's happening in your meditation and what's happening in your daily life, then apply exactly the same methods that you've learned to use in your meditation to your daily life, and it will work in the same way.
Can I have one more question to that?
Sure, that was such a good question. You have two more, if you want.
Okay. So many more. So how does it go together with being spontaneous? Like, you react spontaneously from a place, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good, but it's still what it's not necessarily a bad impulse at that moment. It's just a very spontaneous reaction. But it's not defined as mindfulness. You reflect first before you speak or you act. How does that fit together?
Well, mindfulness doesn't necessarily mean that you reflect, and think about everything that you're going to do. It means that you are aware of what you're doing. Although what you say may be spontaneous, it is preceded by other things. It's preceded by thoughts and emotions. And if you're in a state of awareness and you recognize that those thoughts and emotions are not unwholesome, you have the choice to put on the brakes before it gets to the point of spontaneous speaking or acting. But what it's really about is not that you're... we practice in meditation being aware of everything we do, in walking meditation or on retreat when you're eating or dressing or going to the washroom or anything like that, every movement, every action you make, you be fully mindful of it. And as a part of doing that, then you recognize the arising of intention that precedes every action, right? And it's easy to do when you're on retreat. The level of your mindfulness is high, and there's not all that much going on, and so you can start to really catch the intention that arises before every action. You know, the mosquito lands on your forehead, and you recognize the intention to swap it, and you may decide not to. And so, it's the same thing. It's a refinement of your mindful awareness. The spontaneity is not the same thing as unmindfulness, right? But because the intention, the impulse, the formations, they arise spontaneously. But if mindfulness is present, you can also spontaneously choose to stop some before they, you know, become manifest.
Thank you. Makes sense.
main thing is that after a while, it becomes your natural, you know, every time you apply mindfulness to an activity or something that you say that is not wholesome and that is undesirable in a sense in terms of your dharma practice and so forth. If you truly apply mindfulness to that, then what that mindfulness does is it illuminates the cause of that action and the consequences of that action. And that the impulse and inclination to act in a particular way has come from some mental mechanism, some process that is in itself unconscious or subconscious. It's a result of your past conditioning. And it spontaneously evokes a particular emotion and a particular tendency to act in a particular way. And we can go through our life doing that over and over again. And that hidden unconscious mechanism that produces that same kind of reaction every time to those kind of circumstances never gets the feedback that would allow it to change the way it functions, and that's why it goes on and on and on. As a matter of fact, every time you react in a similar way, you're reinforcing the same tendency. But mindful awareness applied, even after the fact, provides that unconscious mental process with a new kind of conditioning, a kind of feedback that the reasons that mechanism had for coming into existence no longer exist. They don't apply. And the consequences that they're producing in the world are not benefiting you and they're not benefiting anyone else. And this, when you keep losing your temper, it's because that part of you that has learned to cause you to lose your temper is still acting on old programming, you know, that for some reason or another it got established that this was a good and useful and helpful thing to do. And so it keeps running that program. But mindful awareness, when practiced effectively, makes those unconscious mechanisms aware that, like I say, that their origins are no longer applicable and their consequences are no longer appropriate. And then they tend to fade away. Then they tend to lose their force. And at that point, the mindful awareness has done its work. And you're not going to have to be worried about not being spontaneous, because what's going to arise spontaneously is loving kindness and generosity and patience and things like that. Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, thank you.
Nobody else is going to say anything. You got your next all probably get somebody else. Yeah.
Well, if I follow what we're talking about.
Good idea.
A lot of times I find a spontaneous response is emotion, is packed with emotion.
Yes.
And particularly in relationships where you know people or, you know, their relatives or partners or something like that. And so I can see that I don't want to be responding in certain ways. And I can even take it sometimes to not responding that way, but internally still carrying along the emotion.
Yeah.
And my question is, how do you dissipate that emotion? I mean, I know there's no simple answer, but...
Well...
Can you repeat that question?
The Okay, well, I'll just repeat what you're saying here, okay? That sometimes you'll have the mindfulness and emotion will arise and you will catch yourself and not act on it.
Right.
But then you're still left flooded with this emotional reaction.
Right. And it dissipates after a while.
Of course.
It would be nice to get to the point that you don't have the action and you don't have the emotional.
Well, if you had a strong emotion arise while you're sitting and meditating, what would you do?
Probably just let it be there.
Or examine it. Look at the way it makes you feel. Look at the way it makes you feel physically, and then examine the nature of the emotion itself. And usually, whether it's in meditation or out, as soon as you sort of take that objective perspective of, well, let me examine this feeling that I have, it becomes a lot easier to be with and to deal with. And it does begin to dissipate. An emotion needs the energy of your buy-in to stay strong. You know, if fear arises and you say, I'm afraid, then that feeds the emotion. But if fear arises and you say, oh, there's fear arising, then you're not feeding it. It has some strength, some energy from the past, but you're not giving it any new energy in the present. And if you just accept it and look at it, it has to dissipate because, you know, it uses up the energy that brought it into existence. Of course, the trick is to not feed it. Using anger once again, if you find you suddenly become angry and you forestall yourself from speaking or acting out of anger, and then the emotion is still there. That doesn't mean that 2 minutes later something else isn't going to be done or said, and you are going to react out of that, right? So that's staying in that place of mindful awareness and objectivity can be a real challenge. But the point is that if you try, and if you don't expect to be perfect, and you don't expect to succeed the first time or every time, you will get results. And if you think about it, what else can you do? There really is nothing else you can do.
Well, I'm just thinking as you're talking that I think one thing that would help is to go to the remembrance that I'm not a separate self.
Yes.
Because the emotion is like, you know, well, I'm right about this, or, you know, I'm something. Mm-hmm. And if you
have that understanding that you're not a separate self, and it's clear enough in your mind, that's a really powerful antidote.
Yeah.
And that's what bodhisattvas use. They get used to being aware of this all the time, and it's the antidote to all sorts of negative mental states that arise. But if you're not there yet, there's other things you can use. You can look at it and look at it and say, wow, this doesn't make me feel good. Wow, this doesn't do me any good or anybody else any good. Wow, this is not a good state to be in. And everybody can relate to that, you know. And it's a pretty potent antidote that you can bring to bear on these things. Because usually what creates our problem, the habitual way that we as human beings behave, is whatever arises, we identify it and we feed it. First of all, we identify with it and we feed it and we energize it. And then losing the track of what I was going to say there. Yes. And then, as a result of that, we act. We say something or do something. Well, then, instead of examining that mindfully and saying, that was not a good thing to do. That was really, you know, this emotion. Instead of saying this emotion makes me feel bad, and the consequences of those actions are harmful to myself and others, we justify it. We rationalize it. And then if it produces consequences we don't like, well, we look away from or ignore them or make a story around them. And that's exactly why our experience that things don't go well when we react this way doesn't have any effect on changing the way that we react. We keep reacting in the same way. Because we're actually blocking out all the input of information to the mind. You know, and this keeps the change from happening. Other positive ways you can look at what's happening in the moment is recognizing that you are not the emotions, that they are products of your mind. That, think about it. Emotions have no existence outside of the mind. They are solely a product of the mind itself. That's all any emotion is. And what are they coming from? If you look at where they come from, most of them have really primitive origins. They, you know, and so what you're looking at when you see emotions arising is creations of the mind that are coloring your experience and that you can choose to buy into or not. If your mind chooses to flood itself with a feeling of love and appreciation, hey, go with it. It may not be real, but it's but the effects of it are real. The effects of it are, I'm happy, I make you happy. The effects of it are real. On the other hand, if some part of your mind chooses to flood your mind with feelings of anger or resentment or fear or anxiety or worry or anything else, then you don't have to buy into it. So that helps you to separate yourself from it and look at it objectively. Your emotions are like, you know what happens if you were walking across the floor here and you stepped on a slippery spot and you started to fall down, what would happen? You immediately put your arm out to catch yourself, right? And yes, that's like an automatic reflex reaction. Right? Now, if you were carrying a precious jewel in your hand, let's make it a fragile jewel, would you fling your arm out to catch yourself? No. Right? And your emotions are the same thing. They're like, you know, the instinctive motor pattern that makes you throw out your arms to catch yourself when you fall is on the same basic kind of level as really all of our emotions. There are these innate, inherent things that we're born with that act as a really crude way of directing our behavior. But they can't be overridden.
This is, I guess, indirectly involved in what we're talking about, but something that I've been pondering for the last couple of weeks is you can have acceptance on an emotional level and feel, all right, and this has happened throughout my lifetime, where you're comfortable with whatever the situation is, and you feel emotionally that there's total acceptance, but yet there's a physiological problem that'll come up. And this is what I'm having a little bit of difficulty with, trying to understand how you can be a real simple example, going to the acupuncturist, and I made the appointment, I'm ready to go. I'm not apprehensive about it, but my hands will start to sweat as soon as I sit down in the chair. Mm-hmm. So there's a physiological reaction to something that I feel that I have total acceptance for, and that's with the stress that we all experience, and you know, the high blood pressure, the heart disease, you know, everything is tied into that. So how do you get a balance? How do you even know that you need a balance? Because you think emotionally you're okay. And your body's saying, oh no.
Well, if your hands start to sweat, shake, and things like that, are you really free of anxiety?
Well, evidently no, but no. Psychologically, I feel that I am. If you were to ask me, I'd say, sure, it's not a problem.
Right.
So, evidently not in tune.
My model of the mind is, it's this big, and the part of it you're consciously aware of is this little tiny piece.
Right, I understand that.
So, the part that you're consciously aware of, you can look around and say, oh, no anxiety here. Whoops. Some other part doesn't feel as quite the same way.
Right.
So, now, first of all, you can just accept that. Say, okay. Obviously, you know, at some subconscious level, some part of my mind isn't so sure that isn't so comfortable with this. And just be with it. Okay, you know, accept that you're having that physiological reaction. You know, it's no different than going to the store when you're having an allergy attack, right?
I guess, but I don't know.
Well, and I mean, in that kind of situation, you can go to the you describe, but you can still go to the chiropractor, even though you've got sweaty, shaky hands, and just notice that I've got sweaty, shaky hands, some part of me isn't quite all right with this. But it doesn't get in the way, does it?
Well, sometimes it does when you come up with palpitations or chest pain or things like this.
Okay, well, and that's a different thing. If it starts if it starts to get in the way, now there's a whole different problem.
Yeah.
So then, now, you know, sometimes people... I did this a lot earlier in my life. I didn't have emotions. I had a very narrow set of emotions. I only allowed myself a few. You know, lust was okay, and anger was okay, everything else. I didn't do those sorts of things. Which, of course, wasn't true. It just meant that, you know, I trained myself to shut down when any of the other kinds of emotions came up. I wouldn't let them through. And the best thing that ever happened to me was when I started letting them through. Because, you know, when they're all locked up in the back room, you know, with the windows and doors closed, and, you know, they don't change much. You need to get them out into the light of the day.
So a certain amount of emotional denial.
Well, yeah, and we do that. I mean, you know, you make up your mind that, you know, I'm not worried about going to the dentist. You know, root canal's probably going to be fun. You know, but you find that you can't even put the key in the ignition of the car without knocking on the floor. It might be that you need to be a little more honest with yourself. Allow the emotions to come up. At least if they come up, you have a chance to deal with them. If you keep them locked away in the back, then, you know, you might manage in spite of them and you might not, but you can't do much with them. Mm-hmm. So it's much better to get them out in the open. And we do that. You know, it's not just people with serious psychological problems that shut down certain kind of emotions. We all do that. You know, we are famously self-judgmental, and we have all kinds of ideas of who we are and what kind of person we are, and this is the way I react, and this is the way I don't, and you know, so we all do that. So recognize it, and when you see those outward signs like the ones that you described, you know that you know there's an opportunity here to get more fully in touch with yourself.
Okay. So in response to her, it means that you don't say, oh, I'm anxious or I'm in fear, but, oh, there's anxiety coming up. Okay, I thought, you know, I have it under control, but this is still there. But you make that distance between what you recognize and what you identify with. And that's
right.
Already the part where you can solve more, right, in terms of getting... Hopefully.
That's right.
I'm trying.
That's right. You don't need to identify with it, but these are the sure signs that it's present. And in that case, you don't need to embrace it to bring it in the open. But you know, if you think about it, dealing with emotions, emotions are all. They have a psychic component, but they always have a physical component. They affect the blood flow and the heart rate and the respiratory rate, and they produce sensations. You know, some emotions make your throat tight and your voice change, and others make you have an aching here, and you know. So they all have these physical components, and those are so much a part of the emotions that. If you see those physiological things present and put your attention on them, then they can bring you into full awareness of the emotion, because then that is the emotion in a sense, and the psychic part will become it will come into awareness using the physical part as the means to it. In the same way. Going the other way and dealing with emotions. When emotion comes up, it's really strong. You really feel it psychologically, intensely. And you're overwhelmed by it. The way that you can make a space between you and the emotion is focus on the physical aspect. Because if you think about it, the psychological aspect is what grabs you in your selfhood and makes you identify with it, makes you really suffer, makes you really believe in it. Makes it hard to separate yourself from it. But if you go to, the tightness in my throat and the ache in my chest and the nervousness, the trembling in my hands and so forth, that you can be objective with in a way that may initially not be possible with the subjective feeling experience.
Mm-hmm.
You use the physical part to create that distance, and then you can turn your attention to the psychological part and come to a place of acceptance and dealing with it. So. Yeah?
What do you mean by identify with?
That's the kind of thought, whether it's a conscious verb, what do I mean by identify with? Thank you. She makes sure that I get these things that are part of it. That's an important thing to do. But by identify, I mean either there may be actually the verbal thought in your mind, but even if there isn't, there's some other thought in your mind that of the form that I am. Mm-hmm. I am angry. I am afraid. I am restless. I am annoyed. That's the identification. That's the self and an equal sign and the emotion. And so, to be objective is to make it more into there is consciousness of these things that are happening, these things that are arising, these things that are occurring, these experiences that are taking place. That make sense to you?
No, I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No, sorry.
Well,
I mean, I hear the words, but I can't really find anything.
Anybody else help me with this, or anybody else have the same problem?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it just made me think of the you know, technique of meditation. When these thoughts flood into my mind, you know, if I, so, I mean, they're kind of like magnetic sometimes. You know, there I go. And eventually, I mean, and it's getting better with time. The more I meditate, I say, oh, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be meditating. Then I'll go back to it. But that when I get, start following these things that go, and that, then that's what I'm doing. That's what I call identifying with. I'm identifying with these thoughts, but you know how somebody had put it, like meditating is like being at the bottom of a stream and all these thoughts are going by overhead, and if I just watch them and let them go by, and then I stick with the meditating, if I they're like maybe another metaphor, hooks from a fishing line. If I grab the hook, then I'm identifying with that, so I get carried away with it. So that's what I thought of what I want to aim at is these things are going to come around. They do all the time, but if I can let them go and get back to my business of meditating, then I'm not identifying with him. But if I go off on the fantasy that is nurtured by one of these ideas, then I'm identifying with that, which happens to me a lot when I'm meditating. But it's getting better. The more I meditate, the more I say, oh yeah, okay, get back to business. And also, like what you suggested, and because I hear people complain regularly, well, you know, I'm just doing this so poorly, I'm almost going off, and you say, well, be happy when you recognize that and go back and think, what a great thing it is that I, you know, remember that. So that's what I try to do, and that's like trying not to identify with the stuff. If I have something positive to pull me back and be happy about seeing what's going on, then that's not identifying.
So he was speaking of thoughts, but does that help you in any way to, maybe another word I would suggest is clinging and grasping to it. It's interesting, a word from the Pali that is translated as clinging and grasping in English is upadana. And what upadana connotes in terms of our mental processes specifically is that the mind generates something like an emotion or a thought or an idea, and we make it real. We reify it.
Yeah, and that makes more sense. Reify.
Okay. So when an emotion arises, what we naturally do, what naturally happens so quickly that we don't even realize there's an alternative, is exactly that we take this thing that is nothing more than a mental construct or product of the mind, but we make it into a reality. We make it real. Mm-hmm. Which is also called grasping, clinging, reifying. But we don't have to do that. We can see it for just what it is. It is, you know, Bob's analogy with thoughts is that it's like the stuff that's passing by. And it's the same thing. When an emotion arises, if you ever watch an emotion carefully, what you'll see is emotions aren't constant, they fluctuate. They get more intense, and they get less intense. They get more intense, and they get less intense. You know, they have a cyclic pattern to them. And so they arise, and then they pass away, and then they come back again, and they pass away. And you just watch that happen without doing what we usually do and making it into the reality that we're living in the moment.
So allowing something to arise is not the same as identifying.
That's right. Yeah. You know, it's like windstorm, you know, You can allow the windstorm to arise, or you can resist it. It's going to come no matter what. I mean, maybe you can stop the wind. I can't.
No, and I think that's part of my confusion here is because it seems like things arise and pass more quickly the more I really allow it to arise. Like, I mean, say fear.
Yeah.
And I don't mean any particular external expression of it or any particular story around it.
Yeah.
But the more I'm willing to just let it, you know, come.
Yes, and let it go.
Let it go. Yeah,
exactly.
Which feels really different in my body than trying to observe it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. I kind of know what's going on, but the that little tiny part of the brain is still
right.
Knowing, but the rest is just kind of going through the.
Yeah. Well, and that's if you allow it to come and go, without you see. And that's the problem, once again, with translations and things like that. You say grasping and clinging, you know, but the word upadana applies equally well to when you try to drive something away.
Yeah.
If fear arises and you resist it, try to make it go away, you've made it real. You've given it energy. But even
for me, it seems like, you know, observing a lot of times is like this real subtle aversion.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, yes, there's subtle aversion. That's so just observe it, allow it to be there until it goes away, and until the time comes that even subtle aversion doesn't come up. So I have to meditate sometime.
What helps me with this is also when you talked earlier about the mind is not just one thing. The mind has all these compartments, and so when I'm feeling I'm here, right here, and I don't let go with this, and then the thought, this is just one part. So go to a part which is more positive, what Bob was saying, you know, reaffirm the ones where you can let go of that gripping. That helps me a lot in terms of this is not just one thought, it is just one part of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That right now.
That is that's a helpful perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I save all these wonderful questions, and we'll have some more discussion later.